唱歌，我就把
that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nubs. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on Deport from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still lights of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
I'm okay. I'm okay.
Bells will be ringing. This sad, sad news. Oh, what a Christmas to have the blues. My baby's gone. Be greeted once again. Choir will be singing on silent night. Christmas carol by candlelight. Please come home for Christmas. Please come home for Christmas. By New Year's night, friends and relations send salutations. Sure as the stars shine above, but this is Christmas. Yes, this is Christmas, my dear. Won't you tell me you're never more wrong? Christmas and New Year's will find you home. There'll be no more sorrow, no grief and pain. And I'll be happy, happy once again.
Hotep, happy holidays, peace and greetings to all of you, my brothers and sisters, and welcome to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers, and I'm your host this evening as we prepare to talk about the very special time in the African-American community is Kwanzaa. We thought we would open up with that little piece by the rendition of the great Charles Brown's Please Come Home for Christmas by Brother Anthony Hamilton. I used to always feel that it wasn't Christmas till I heard that song. A very memorable kind of time. The holidays are oftentimes that we think of our family and our loved ones, and we get together, and regardless of how you may celebrate it or what is it that you may look at, it always is a time of memory and blessings and just good feelings. And I hope that all of you are feeling well and here, and obviously you, not so much for the commercialism of it, but just the good feeling and the spirit that comes together as a family, working together and talking together. And we are here at the Black Reality Think Tank as a family. We come together each week, every Tuesday, at 8 o'clock Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central, as we try to talk about things that impact and affect our lives as well as the lives of our families and our communities. So I thank all of you, and I appreciate you. This is known throughout the Western world as Christmas Eve, and everybody's doing a lot of things. Hopefully by now you settle down. If you are tied into the commercial part of it, that you've done all you can do, and that you are now just relaxing and taking it easy. And hopefully you are joining us or have joined us here on the Black Reality Think Tank. Tonight we're going to talk about Kwanzaa, which is a very special time, as I said earlier, in the African-American community. We're going to talk about its significance, its importance, what it means, what it needs to mean to our people, not only just as a celebration, but as a way of life and a point of living. So that's what we want to do tonight. And we have, as always, our community guests and our brothers and sisters who join us each week as we spread the word and continue to spread the word. And I ask all of you who are listening to spread the word to your friends and your neighbors and your family members and tell them to listen to the Black Reality Think Tank. We need your support wholeheartedly, and we are hoping that very much for this to grow in the year 2020 as we begin to move forward and do some of the things that are necessary. You know, as I've indicated, you know, many times here on the Black Reality Think Tank, you know, we have to begin to find a workable plan that we can use in the lift and the uplift of our people. And so we very much have talked about Kwanzaa. We've talked about some of the offshoots of Kwanzaa that we can look at as well. And so we want to consistently review those ideas and really talk about how we can make them happen and, you know, can spread the word throughout our community, you know, about the not only, as I said, just the holiday itself, but the principles and the ideas. A couple of weeks ago, we had a wonderful dialogue. We talked about that commercialization part of Christmas and the Christianization part of Christmas and all of that. And again, we are not attempting to play the Grinch role, but we want to just kind of let our people know that we have to focus on other things, that we have to begin to look more deeply into our community and our lives. There are a lot of things that trick us and try to throw us off track as a people, but we want to always stay focused. And those of us who say that we are woke, we want to make sure that you pass that on to others in terms of how we need to view ourselves. We're not trying to tell you what to do. We're not trying to tell you how to live your life. We're just looking at what history has told us. And as the great John Henry Clark said, you know, history is a current event, and we want to kind of do that. One of the things that we always do, and we're going to get right into our discussion, I have several individuals that are online now. We're waiting for some to join us who normally are here. So we're going to do. But as always, as you know, we do our ancestral profile. We never go without thanking those who made it possible, whose shoulders we stand on. And so tonight I want to pay attention, pay special tribute to a brother who... we may have talked about him before, but if not, we want to do his name. His name is John A. Williams. John A. Williams. Brother Williams was born 1925, and he transitioned to the ancestral realm in 2015. John A. Williams was an American writer, He was an academic, and he was a journalist. He is best known for his explorations of Black identity in his 1967 best-selling novel called The Man Who Cried I Am. The Man Who Cried I Am. John Alpha Williams was born on December the 5th, 1925 in Jackson, Mississippi. But soon after his birth, his family moved to Syracuse, New York. He dropped out of high school in search of work and later joined the Navy in 1943, serving in the Pacific as a medical corpsman. Upon his return to the United States, he finished his high school education and he obtained a bachelor's degree in English from Syracuse University in 1950. John A. Williams was originally wanted to become a journalist. He moved to New York City in 1955, and his first real work in the field came in 1958 when he became the European correspondent for Ebony and Jet magazines. In the 1960s, he reported for Newsweek and Holiday magazines from Europe, Africa, and the Middle East. John Williams married Laurie Isaac in 1965, and they raised three sons together, including two sons from Williams' previous marriage. Since Williams was an African-American and Isaac was Jewish, the family decided to leave Manhattan and to move to Teaneck, New Jersey, in 1975, because they felt that interracial marriage would be more accepted there. Although Williams published his first novel, The Angry Ones, in 1960, it was his second novel in 1961 called Night Song that garnered literary attention. It was based on the novel he was recommended by the American Academy of Arts and Letters for a fellowship in Rome. However, he was rejected without explanation. In 1967, his third novel, The Man Who Cried I Am, was published, and it remains Williams' most successful work. The novel about a dying Black American writer in Europe looking back on his life became known for its description of something that was called the King Alfred Plan. It was a fictional government plan to intern and then destroy the United States Black population. Although it was a literary device crafted by Williams, many conspiracy theorists continued to believe that this plan really did exist. Williams considered the 1970s to be his most productive decade overall, as during the time he wrote four nonfiction books, four novels, and he edited or co-edited four anthologies. In 1970, John A. Williams accepted a full-time teaching position at Rutgers University in New Jersey, where he spent the next 15 years teaching English and journalism until his retirement from the university in 1994. By the 1980s, Williams grew increasingly dissatisfied with the literary and publishing world, which led to him to publish Click Song in 1982, which was a critique loosely based on his personal struggle to become successful. Williams has received numerous awards throughout his life, culminating with in the American Book Awards Lifetime Achievement Awards, which he received in 2011. Over the course of his lifetime, Williams published widely across genres, including over 20 books and numerous essays and articles. He was a prolific writer and dedicated his entire career to producing new writing formats. He has been described by many writers and critics as one of the best, but little-known American writers of the 20th century. John A. Williams died on July 3, 2015, at the age of 89, in a veteran's home in Paramus, New Jersey, due to complications from Alzheimer's disease. He is survived by his wife and his sons, as well as a multitude of grandchildren and great-grandchildren. John A. Williams. Okay, and in light of Brother Williams' work, I remember reading his book when I was very young, in my 20s. I remember him, that whole King Alfred plan idea, and at that time the Black Panthers were strong in action, and there were a lot of revolutionary ideas going around the country at that time. And the federal government was responding from the COINTELPRO by arresting any type of revolutionary idea or individual from African-American community. And brother, one of our listeners, Brother Otis Griffin, sent me a article, and I had heard something about this, but there was an article based on one of the brothers from the Black Panther Party. His name was Seth Hayes. And I just want to kind of give a shout out to Brother Hayes, who was a former Black member. He recently transitioned a couple of days ago. Brother Hayes was a Black Panther member. He died at the age of 72. He was born in Harlem in October of 1947. He is the grandson of sharecroppers. He was drafted into the Vietnam War and was awarded a Purple Heart. Hayes joined the Black Panther Party after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr. He worked in the party's free medical clinics and the free breakfast programs. And in 1973, he was convicted of the killing of a New York City transit officer, which he always has denied. Hayes was recently released from prison on parole last year after 45 years behind bars, making him one of the longest held political prisoners in the United States. Brother Hayes died on Saturday morning at his home in New York City. Brother Robert Seth Hayes. And I really thank Brother Griffin for sending me that, so I want to read that to our audience. We just want to pay tribute to a lot of our soldiers who have spent long time on the battlefield, you know, fighting for liberation, trying to do some of the other things that were necessary. So anyway, we are back here. I'm so glad again, like I said, really happy that we have been able to move in the direction of trying our best to build the radio station, to build the programming. And I said, it's going very, very well, going very well. So tonight we want to talk about Kwanzaa. I'm waiting for one of my co-hosts to join us. She has not joined us as yet, but that's okay. We'll move forward. As you know, we are looking at a celebration that will start on Thursday of this week, start at the beginning, and will go to December 31st. And that was a very grand opportunity for our community to come together as a family. And I know it's always done very well here in Wisconsin. Also, I know as well as in Atlanta and New York, they really celebrate extensively that holiday. And so we hopefully can, if any of you are planning to go, I would suggest that Wisconsin, here in Wisconsin, it's the Wisconsin Black Historical Museum is the is one of the organizations that that does sponsor, and then they have a big celebration starting this Thursday. And so, by all means, I would suggest that you give them a call and get the correct times and so forth, and go and join a wonderful celebration. So tonight we want to talk about that a little bit. As you know, Kwanzaa is an African-American and a very Pan-African type holiday that celebrates family, it celebrates community and culture. It is observed, as I indicated earlier, from December 26th to January 1st, and its origins may be found in the first harvest celebrations of Africa, from which this holiday really takes its name. Kwanzaa is derived from the phrase Matunda ya Kwanza, which means first fruits in Kiswahili. It is a Pan-African tongue that is the most widely spoken language of Africa. The first fruits celebrations are recorded in African history. And you could read at them long before Dr. Karenza pulled this together, but this history is dating back to ancient Kemet and Nubia. A lot of it is with reference to both ancient and modern times, appearing in other classical African civilizations as well, such as the Ashanti land and the Yoruba land, and among societies and very large empires in both classical and contemporary Africa. Kwanzaa was conceived and developed in 1966 by Dr. Molena Ron Karenga, who is an author, a scholar, an activist, who stressed the need to preserve continually to revitalize and promote African-American culture. And so what we have been doing here at the Black Reality Think Tank is each year is that we have to allot some time for us to talk about it in various ways. I remember one year we were able to talk about it from the festivity position. We talked about healthy eating and using this as a time to begin to do that. It is not a substitute, as Dr. Karenga said, for Christmas. It is simply a holiday for our people to celebrate family and community. We are not, I don't think in his founding of this organization he attempted at any point to dismiss those who might want to celebrate Christmas or those who are of the Christian faith who understand this to be the birth of Jesus Christ. We're not attempting to disrupt any of that. We just simply feel that this is a celebration where we focus on our people, and we do that in a way that shows love and sunshine. And so next Tuesday, we will, and when we're on, we will still continue to talk about Kwanzaa just a little bit from another different perspective than today, because that will be the last day of Kwanzaa on next Tuesday, December 31st. But still, we want you to join us and be able to kind of talk a little bit about, you know, how all of that does. So what we're going to do now is we want to look a little bit at those principles and ideas and try to ask ourselves the question, okay, these are good celebrations, wonderful time for family and friends, but how do we put these principles into practice? And why is it that we have not been able to do that? This is several has been going on for a long time. Are these principles in practice? Do we practice umoja, unity, self-work and responsibility, kuchitakalia, nia? Are we practicing these in our everyday cultural life? And that's the question we want to raise tonight and see what our audience has to share with us as it relates to that. And then just kind of maybe make some suggestions on what we can do in order to see that our community puts those in place. Now, I'm not saying by any means that there are folk and organizations and that are not doing that already. There are some who are attempting to practice the principles of Kwanzaa. And as a matter of fact, I know some. And those of you probably out there know some as well. But we want to first kind of like go through it. So what I'd like to do is I'm going to go through each one of the seven principles, and I'm going to ask, look at the idea of what that principle means, and then ask our audience to contribute into that idea and to see maybe examples that they know of people practicing these, and maybe suggestions on ways that we can begin to strengthen this idea. And the first one that we're going to talk about is umoja. Umoja is the principle of unity. That is the first of the seven principles of Kwanzaa. And that unity one is a very big one, and one that we hear in discussions many, many times in many, many places about the fact of being able to unify as a people, as a culture, as a community. And the question becomes, have we done that? Are we doing that? Are we thinking about how to do that? Are we building agendas to try to unify and unify our families and our community and our people? And so let's start with that. Well, first of all, I want to start on a positive note and say that I know of organizations that throughout our community, just like you do, that are practicing that umoja principle, that are looking at unity and operating. And one of the ones that I want to mention as very dear and close to me is an organization out of Dallas, Texas. And I happen to know personally the work that this this group of young ladies are doing. It's a group of women. And their organization is called Soul Sisters Stand Up. And it is an attempt to bring women together, bring the mothers, bring the womb together, and begin to empower each other. Meaning as women, begin to empower themselves, to give them strength and support where there may be weaknesses, where there may have been challenges in their lives and has caused them to want to give up, who are trying to raise children, who are trying to build families and trying to do some of those things that are so much necessary in order to survive. But yet at the same time, they're strained by many, many things. And this is not a male bashing thing, but a lot of our brothers have left our sisters hanging out there in some cases. Not all, but in some cases. And so this organization has come together to sort of give these women a chance to come together, bond, work with each other, to be able to cry out and release the pain within them. And I think it's a very powerful organization. But however, the Umoja principle is there in terms of organizing the principle together. But there are some cement problems. There are some problems with the glue. And that's based on community support. There are possibilities and opportunities that this organization could grow, could reach out to more people, reach out to more women, reach out to others in the community, and to help them to grow, you know, and help them to be able to sustain what they're doing. As you know, anything we do in this country, you got to have resources. And so they are very dearly in need of resources. I have the director of the organization, the founder and director of the organization, is a personal friend. And I've heard her over the months crying out for help from her community there in Dallas, in the national community, to come together and see the vision of what is going on with these women. Again, the Umoja principle is at work here. And how to keep that going is a very clear example of what we are talking about here tonight and how to use these Kwanzaa principles. And so I want her just real briefly to kind of tell us a little bit about Soul Sister Stand Up. She can better explain it than I can. I just happen to know particularly some of the things that she's been trying to do and things that she has been trying to put in place to try to keep this work going. And it's difficult. It's hard. Because I think in a lot of cases, some people haven't been able to buy into the vision. She has websites. She has functions. She does all kinds of things to help. But I want to just talk about it a little bit and then maybe give our audience a chance to give her feedback. And then obviously, the bottom line is that if anybody listening audience or they're in a position to help her with either through donations, through ideas, through programs, through things that she may need to keep that organization going, this is a good time right here, Kwanzaa, as we practice the seven principles to put that in work tonight, right here tonight. So I'm going to open up the line and let her come in and introduce her program. She's a very dear friend. She is, as I said, lives in Dallas, Texas. She's originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And she is a PK, a preacher's kid, as they call it. But her father has transitioned to the ancestral world. And so now she's here and with herself, trying to raise two children herself and do some things. So good afternoon, Lotus J. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of the conversation tonight. I really appreciate it. I love the Black Reality Think Tank and all that you all are doing. And I try to tune in and encourage the sisterhood as well as, other people.
Okay.
To tune in, so I really appreciate the time.
Thank you. You know, what we're trying to do tonight is we're trying to move beyond the celebration part of Kwanzaa and look at the more practical part of those principles and how we can use them. And so when I thought about Umoja, I thought about you. So using that as an example of what you're trying to do in this unified system with working with women, tell us a little bit about the dream, how this came about, some of your successes and failures that you've had with Soul Sister Stand Up.
Okay. First of all, I think Ujamaa is the perfect principle to associate with our sisterhood because of the unity, because at the end of the day, that is exactly what we strive for, is the unity in the mindset, you know, coming together as one. So what Soul Sister is all about, and we call it Soul Sister Stand Up because it's sister of my soul, but it's a call to action. That's why we added the stand up, like let's stand up together. Let's be one together. Let's unify together. And what that means to us is, as you stated in the introduction, there are so many of us that go through trying unexpected situations, and we all do, men and women. You know, we go through situations in life where you know, it just catches us off guard. And a lot of us live lives where one paycheck, something happening to our car or, you know, an appliance, one situation can change our lives for years. You know, someone transitions, someone gets sick. There are a lot of different situations that happen. And oftentimes in our community, we're not prepared for it. So what Soul Sister does is allows it's a group of women that decided to come together and say, hey, I'm struggling, you're struggling, you're struggling, and you're struggling. Let's bring, I'm going to bring my apples, you bring your oranges, you get your bananas, she going to bring her grapes, and we're going to bring it together and have a fruit salad. Because I'm tired of eating apples every day. But if I can put what I have with what you have, we can work a lot better together. And we can enjoy a healthier meal together. And so we're trying to create a mindset of people that understand that when we do better as a community, we do better as individuals. So unity, I think, is the perfect description to really get into the heart of who we are. And the organization started in 2014. And it was right when my mother was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer. And life was extremely challenging. Extremely challenging. I went through an extreme hardship at one time. Mm-hmm. But what I realized was my sisters, I have two biological sisters who are beautiful people, but they were going through the same thing. They were going through the struggle of losing my mother and some of the other things that happened in our lives in recent times. So they were not equipped. We were not equipped to handle being a strong shoulder for each other because we're all in a situation. So I tapped into my community, family, and we started leaning on each other because I needed help. I knew that I was drowning. And I remember one time, and this is when it really, really came to me. One time, my mother was extremely ill, and we were working really hard to you know, do natural care with her as well as the doctor's care. So it was extremely expensive. And I went to my community family and I said, hey, I need help. You know, we can't pay her rent and the medicine and everything. Now we're just kind of drowning. And those ladies came through. I had sisters that went grocery shopping. Some of them used their food stamps or Quest cards or Lone Star cards, and they bought groceries and they would fix meals and we would sell the meals out of one of our community hubs. It was a bookstore. And they helped me raise money to take care of my family, you know, my mother when she was ill. And so those are the types of things that we're trying to get people to understand the importance of we do whatever we have to do within means to take care of each other because that's African. That's how Africans operate. So I'm going to pause a little bit in case you have any questions.
No, this is great. I mean, and very clearly, as you say, you keep weaving in the idea here that we're of Kwanzaa. We're talking about, obviously, this is a seasonal holiday for Christmas, and you're talking about presents and all of that. What better way, I think, to celebrate that and to give homage to this as a live situation? I mean, very clearly. And so what were some of the things that you did from that? What was the springboard then in getting to SS Yes, you. I think that's your acronym.
Well, we from my experience of going through that extreme hardship, and it was an extreme hardship. Mm-hmm. But my experience, what it did to me is it made me open my eyes and view life differently, because I came from somewhat of a privileged lifestyle. It doesn't mean it was always so much money around, but I was blessed to come from such a solid foundation. Mm-hmm. Great parents, the world's greatest parents in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, Pastor Clarence Hill and my mother was Glennie Hill. And they spread a lot of love in Milwaukee, and they were known for outreach. And so I was able to tap into that. You know, when I started going through, I was able to tap into the way that I was raised. And so from there, we created an organization where, I'm sorry, you say something?
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. From there, we created an organization that we have assistance with utilities. If someone is going through a situation and they can't pay their utilities, we have sisters that will get on the phone and find resources to help them to pay their utility. We have, we've done a 3-on-3 basketball tournament and use the funds to help a sister going through with her son. You know, and she needed some help with some medical expenses. So we did 3-on-3 basketball tournaments, and the portion of the proceeds went to help her with her son. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that he needed, you know, medical care. We've done a lot of different fashion shows and different things like that, where the money will be raised to go through to help single mothers. We've done things to help women experiencing domestic violence and human trafficking. We do talk shows where we deal with the essence of being a woman and some of the things that we need as women. We never, ever, ever, there's a ground rule where there's absolutely no male bashing, because it's not a feminist organization. It is a sisterhood that understands that sometimes we have to come together and help each other out while we have voids in our homes and in our families and in our finances and different things like that. So we really do try to bring our resources together to show up in times where it's critical. Mm-hmm. And so what we're doing is adapting a lifestyle where Kwanzaa is practiced 365 days a year.
Love it.
And it's not 7 days. And in all honesty, if we had more individuals that really took the time to study the principles, there's absolutely no way that there's something that you would not want your family to live according to. It's principles of love. It's principles of inspiration. It's the principles of let's come together and get things done. It's principles of financial stability. Mm-hmm. In our organization, we do workshops. One of the workshops is financial health, where we are developing a program where women that need to stay in our communal living home can save money. And then that way, when it's time for them to get on their feet and they've had an opportunity to save up enough, we'll have some funds to give back to her. Mm-hmm. We work with different organizations with credit cleanup. And, you know, because sometimes when we go through, we get real creative in our survival. And right. It's not always with bad, ill intentions. It's not always because people spend frivolously. Sometimes it's a matter of trying to survive.
Right.
So we try to help women get back on track and get back on their feet. And the organization is really powerful. As a matter of fact, last week we had someone to reach out from Florida who needed a place to stay. Mm-hmm. Because she's coming to DFW, getting away from a bad situation, and needed a place to, because she doesn't know anyone here, but she got a job offer here. So she needed someone to, an organization, just to kind of help bridge the gap for her. Mm-hmm. We've had cases where we've had to go in the middle of the night and get a young mother, a few times actually, out of situations that were extreme domestic violence, and help them to get on their feet. So it's really a love and action type of an organization and sisterhood.
Right. For our listening audience, we are listening to the Black Reality Think Tank. My name is William Rogers. I'm your host. This is sort of our Kwanzaa special. on this very special time of the year. This is a seasonal holiday for a lot of different kinds of things, but we're celebrating Kwanzaa here at the Black Reality Think Tank tonight. It's a call-in format. You can call us here at area code 215-490-9832. I repeat, area code 215-490-9832. We're going to take a look at the seven principles of Kwanzaa, and we're going to try to offer suggestions on ways that we can live those principles, not just celebrate them and light candles. Those are good, too, but we want to live those principles. We want to give examples of people that are trying to do it right now. And so we are talking to an organization that is actually put into action the first principle of Kwanzaa, Umoja, and we want to hear her idea of what she has done. And so that's why we are talking about this particular organization, Soul Sister Stand Up. There is something, let me just say, about this organization that very clearly has been something directly impacting myself that I knew about. I had a student who was one of my students at the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee. And I'm not going to call any names, obviously, because I don't want to put business in the street that way. But she called me, and she was in Dallas, Texas at the time, and told me that she was having some real serious crisis right now, and she needed some help. She was trying to find a way to get to the airport because she was trying to escape some abuse that she was involved in Dallas. And so, first of all, I thought then of Soul Sisters because I know that's the kind of work they were doing. And so I called Lotus and asked her, would she give this young lady a call? And I'll kind of let Lotus take it from there on what took place in that whole situation. Would you share with us then what happened out of that? And this is something that happened 11:30, 12 o'clock at night when this particular incident popped up. Lotus?
And that's exactly how we need to react, though, because you never know when that call comes through at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night, if that's going to be the last call somebody is making is to cry out for help. And so when Dr. Rogers asked me to reach out to her, I reached out to the young lady and asked, I texted her and asked if it was okay for me to give her a call. I told her that you gave me her information. She said, please do. And we talked, you know, and we were able to kind of get an idea of what was going on with her. And she did. She needed help. She's about an hour plus away from me. Maybe about an hour, 20 minutes away from where I was, and I didn't have transportation at the moment to get to her. But I called, I put out a message in our sisterhood and our organization. I had about six or seven sisters in that area who showed up and said, hey, what do you need? What does she need? And so then we just, you know, we went to work and we started making phone calls to see different resources and how to assist her. So, we were able to talk to her and kind of get her a little stable. And I believe now she's back to where she's in a safe environment, but I've been able to keep in touch with her, you know, and text her and just kind of find out how she's doing and just where she is mentally and how things are working out for her and what kind of progress she's making. And she really just said to me, and I saved the message. She said, I appreciate you so much. She said, you've never seen me, but it matters to you, my situation, and I'm so grateful for that. You know, and obviously I'm paraphrasing, but those are the kind of things we want to get to, genuine love and actually really caring about each other. There's another young lady, I believe she's in her probably early 30s, and I would see her, we're Facebook friends, and I saw her crying out for help, you know. Sometimes when people post different messages on the internet and things like that, it's not always for fun. It's not always, you know, just trying to get somebody to laugh or sometimes it's a real cry out for help. So I saw it a couple of times and I sent a message to her and asked her what was going on. And you know, I just told her, you know, I understand. And I know that there's something going on with you, which is causing you to post in the manner because it was negative all the time. And so I just asked her to allow me to work with her, you know, in just changing the way that she was thinking and the way that she was looking at life so that she didn't feel so overwhelmed, because I've been there. And I could tell she felt alone and overwhelmed and like she was suffocating. And I remember that feeling. So now every day I asked her if she would, you know, start off her day with me every single day with a positive thought. And now I have about 6 or 7 women that I do that with, you know, that I've just watched over the internet, and they're crying out for help. And so we, again, it's trying to get back to genuine, authentic love. A lot of people do a lot of things for attention and just to say what they did, but actually getting to the root of the problem and trying to help to stabilize our sisters, it is essential, because in essence, the Black woman is the first person on the earth. There's no life without her. There's no life without her. So I genuinely feel if we could heal the Black woman, we can literally heal the world. Okay. Because she's going to teach those children. And the Black community is the most influential. Everybody watches everything that we do. So just imagine if we could start something to where we can heal that woman. And now she's in a better position to teach her children. And those children are growing up to be the most influential people in the world. What if their influence was more of a positive nature, because that's what they're being fed at home? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of children are suffering because their mothers are suffering. Mm-hmm. They're overwhelmed, and they can't help but be overwhelmed, because life can be overwhelming. But if we have a group, if we can practice unity, you don't have to feel so overwhelmed, because that means when I'm going through it, my sisters got me. They're my the wind beneath my wings. And we have a strong support system in our brothers too, that show up for our organization. Matter of fact, on the board of directors, and yes, it is nonprofit, and on the board of directors, we have a heavier male influence than we do females. So again, it's not feminist at all, but it's right. definitely trying to practice the importance of coming together right. and letting people see that.
Well, let me ask you, on this discussion of the first principle of Kwanzaa, the first fruits, what is often called in the Western world New Year's Christmas Eve. What is it that Soul Sister could use to help it sustain itself and continue to grow? Let our audience know how that could be possible.
Soul Sister definitely needs a strong support system. We are a smaller organization, but we're growing very rapidly.
Okay.
And we do. We need a stronger support system. And right now,
what does that
resources.
Mean? Explain that. So what kind of support?
Right now, we need resources. Right now, we need financial contributions. And we know that there are people who believe in what we're doing, but sometimes we're a little slowful in responding to a cry out for help. But what I've been trying to get people to understand is it may not be you today, but it's definitely going to be you or somebody that you know at some point in your life that's going to need an organization like this.
Okay.
And so we definitely need financial support right now. We have some very pressing situations that we're facing, immediate situations, and even some stability is in jeopardy for some of our ladies. And that's what we're here for, is to make sure that we can do our part in helping. We can't help everybody, and we completely understand that. But we definitely want to be diligent in being a benefit and a help and a support to those that do come under our umbrella.
Right.
So right now, the most pressing need, it really is finances.
So if someone, or any members of our listening audience are there who can do that, are willing to do that, what do they need to do? How should they respond to
it? We have several different options. You can definitely go. We did a campaign a few days ago where we had people to donate $20 and just kind of try to spread that. And you can go to our website and do a donation. And the website is soulsisters.org. That's SOUL. SISTAHS.org, and I can post that on Dr. Rogers. If you all are connected to his Facebook, we can post the website link there.
Okay.
You can also go to PayPal and do a donation. And all of this we can post with him. But it's soulsisterstandup@gmail.com. That's our PayPal. And we do Cash App donations as well. And again, that phone number will be listed, but it's 817-680-0782. Again, 817-680-0782. So we have several different ways that you can donate. Okay. We have a membership for those who are in the DFW area. And we've actually had several different other locations that see what we're doing. And they want to have social chapters where they are as well, including Milwaukee. So we do have memberships, and there are ways to get involved there. We have a strong support system for entrepreneurs in our sisterhood. We really try to support them financially as far as utilizing their services. Matter of fact, we just did a cocktail party this weekend, and we had one sister who came and she did the decorations. We had someone else who donated some time when it came to her catering business, and she was able to display her food. So we have a lot of different ways that we try to support each other's businesses as well.
Okay. Umoja, that's what we are doing, talking about right now, Umoja in practice. We appreciate the principle celebration part of it, but here's an idea of the principle in practice. Let me ask my sister, my co-host who's on tonight, Sister Ayan, if she would have words in relationship to this first principle of Kwanzaa, as we've been talking to our sister from Dallas, Texas, Miss Lotus J. Sister Ayan, any words for her?
I'm going to need about 30 minutes. I ate something that made me sick.
Okay, all right, all right. Okay. Sounds good. Come back to us when you can.
I will.
Brother Marcus, any comments? I know you're there. How you doing this afternoon, this evening?
I'm doing great, good brother. I'm just listening. Your transmission got knocked off the radio, so we got to call in.
Oh, okay. Oh, wow, interesting. Yeah, this with the internet's been messing up all day today too for some reason. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so I'm just listening. All right.
All right. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. Well, Sister Lotus, I appreciate you. This is going to be posted again on our website. You'll be able to go back and listen. It goes in part of our archives, the Time for an Awakening archives. We'll be back very shortly. And we'll post that just in case there are some people who would have listened via the internet. They'll be able to listen again. So one more time, give us that website again, and so that anybody that will listen, that they can get that.
Okay, the website is soulsistas.org. That's soulsistas.org.
All right.
And then, if you wanted to do a donation via Cash App, it's 817-680-0782. And you can look us up on all of our social media. It's Soul Sister Stand Up.
All right. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. Thank you so much. Please stay on if you can. Get back when we get a chance. Hopefully some of your individuals will also listen who are part of your organization as well. Okay. All right. Principle number two. This is the one that a lot of people struggle to say, Kujichagulia, and which is the principle of self-determination. I'm going to ask a brother to just talk a little bit about that self-determination, because he is a part of an organization that has practiced that for years. And that's the Nation of Islam, has been one of the most responsible organizations who has practiced the principles of self-determination. If there's anybody that better has done it other than the Honorable Marcus Garvey, that would have been the Nation of Islam. Brother Timothy, Kujichagulia, what do you think?
Oh, brother, you know, one thing that the messenger put inside of all of us is that we are the first people on the planet. And with that, he said we were ruling in the beginning. We were supposed to rule all the way to the end. And when you have a self-determination and motivation with a plan mm-hmm. to put it in effect, I think what he did was boost our ego. what he did was with Malcolm is that he broke the inferiority of being a Negro. Malcolm became Malcolm Little, who became big, that he said that you could accomplish what you will, like Marcus Garvey told us. Mm-hmm. So determination, that second principle, is most important, because if you believe in yourself, Dr. Rogers, then you've got 90% of the problem that's in front of you that you got to knock down solved. So determination in a nation, determination with Garveyites, determination with Noble Drew Riley and all those great people is what kept them believing in themselves to know that they could do it, of course.
Okay.
Of course.
Now, give me some examples of how the nation uses self-determination. I mean, a lot of us know, but just from your perspective as a member, what are some of the specifics that they use?
Well, I think that when we had the examples, the messenger is the beginning of his movement, of course, was in 1930. So there were people there who were before Malcolm and Farrakhan and Jeremiah Shabazz and John Shabazz and all those folks. They came later. Malcolm came in the nation in the 50s. So they had role models before them. But the perfect example was Elijah Muhammad. But we were, in my time period, were able to see like people like Malcolm and Farrakhan and Dr. Lonnie Shabazz from out of Washington, D.C., who had the Washington, D.C. master at that time. We saw the examples of what they did, of manhood, to say if they did that, what Ali did, what Elijah Muhammad did for Ali was, and what Ali did once he became a member, he showed you what it was like to fight in and out of the ring. He got that from Elijah Muhammad. Elijah Muhammad refused to go to the military and go to war in the military. He got that from Elijah Muhammad. He was the first conscientious objector. So when we have, like, in Africa, you got to ask permissions from the elders to do things. See, we have to bring that back. Young people just don't jump ahead because you have leadership that's before you. So, you know, the Quran says something called the mutawasa, learning from others' examples. You got to learn from the examples of other people so we don't make those same mistakes.
Okay. All right. Now, you know, you talk about, as a matter of fact, when I think about the nation, I think about a lot of principles that are often used. And one of the ones is that third principle, Ujima, and its usage. Can you talk a little bit about that for me?
So, you know, when we speak of Ujima, are we speaking about the solving of problems? Is that correct?
That's right.
Right. So that's a good thing because the messenger had the MGT, and that was for the women. And he had the FOI, that was the men. And there were times, brother, it was a wonderful time to go to the temple, especially on Saturdays, because the brothers, after we would drill, would sit down and talk about our problems in our homes, our problems we were unemployed, our problems we were in the universities, our problems we were looking for jobs. And in that FOI meeting, that was our chance to get together. And you know, brother, we used to have conversations. A lot of brothers didn't get along. And those when we talked about our problems, that would solve us from starting fights with each other.
Okay.
So you have to have brotherhood. I'll give you a perfect example of it. The Million Man March. Okay. Dr. Rogers, oh my God. Nobody was patrolling us. Nobody was directing us. We came together for atonement. And when we all got together, it was the most beautiful thing that you would ever see. All brotherhood, all men. I saw men crying, laughing, just wanting to come together, man, and talk about how we can get out of this economically, politically, and socially. And it was the first one was the one. That was a perfect example.
Okay.
And then after that, the sisters had the Women's March that took place in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. that outnumbered us when we had our first march. They had more than a million women. They almost had two. And I watched them from afar, and they did well. And we got to have those things, Dr. Rogers. We have to have those vicarious catharsis. We have to release these stresses and these ills that we have, our problems. And only we can do that for ourselves, Dr. Rogers.
Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of exactly and very clearly the Honorable Elijah Muhammad as well as the Honorable Marcus Garvey pushed that issue of that collective work and responsibility. You take responsibility for what you're doing and the building of the community. That was very critical for them. A lot of times, you know, we ask ourselves, how is it that these organizations could have survived in the time range that they lived? They lived in segregation and lynchings and horrible lifestyles. But yet, through their collective work effort and their responsibility to the cause in which they were involved in, they stuck with it. And I think that's the key for me, is that you stick to it. You got to stick to it. You know, a lot of times you get into stuff and you challenge so bad, like the sister was saying from Atlanta, you know, sometimes you get challenged so bad you want to give it up. You're tired. Yeah. I mean, I won't deal with all this stuff. You know, but you can't. You gotta keep going. Yeah, I know you want to say something.
See, I'm going to give you an ingredient. The messenger taught us how to love one another. And he taught you how to love yourself. See, that's important. Yeah. We don't like each other as a people. He taught us about ourselves, right, and what we did and how far back we go. You couldn't do nothing but love yourself. We said you did all this in the beginning. And matter of fact, what we had that we did is still around. He let you know what you have and what you own. What's the weight of the planet? How much is land? How much is water? What your people were like? The blue black people of Africa. The blue black people of Africa. He had a lesson on that. He had taught us so much about ourselves and what we did that you couldn't do nothing but like yourself. I like all of us to one day take a trip to Egypt, all parts of Africa, all that you, where you came from. You will think of yourself as being different. I'll give you another example. When we had our Juneteenth parade, the brothers and sisters said, I felt so good with being with each other.
Okay.
That's important.
Okay.
That's
right.
Important.
Right. I agree.
That's important.
Okay. Let me ask my sister from Dallas again, with her organization. When some of the trials and tribulations come at you and you want to, you know, you want to give up, you're looking in your kitty bank and there's 15 cent in there. You don't know where you're going to go. You know, your back's against the wall. What advice do you give or have that you can offer to say to folk, just hang in there? What is that? Where is that coming from? How does somebody grasp onto that concept of hanging there regardless of the circumstances? What is that got to come from?
Well, I had to train myself. And one day, this is after my only brother, my little brother, transitioned, and I went up to Milwaukee for his funeral. And when I came back to Dallas, I was really overwhelmed. And I looked in the mirror and I told myself, the time is going to go by regardless of how you react to it. So you might as well find a way to find everything that you can hold on to that represents hope and love and belief and faith. You better tap into the God inside of you that got you through yesterday, because that's the same God that's going to get you through today and tomorrow. And I just had to learn how to live life day by day. And then I had to understand that I answer the call. So my life is not just my life. My life doesn't belong to just me. My life belongs to my children and my community and this community of sisters that I chose to stand up for. And because of that, they're watching, you know, and they're paying attention. And so if I stand with the strength and I have a core group of sisters that I can lean on, we can present a united front to say we can and we will get through it, because the same 24 hours is going to go through anyway. So I might as well find a way to keep pushing, because it doesn't get any easier just because you give up. I tried that. It didn't work. It got me in a deeper hole. So when I decided to look at life square, dead in the face, and I had to remember, like you said, I'm a pastor's daughter, and I had to remember what I grew up under, you know, and tapping into the God within and just tap into that strength. And from my evolution process and you know, my growing up, learned about the strength of my ancestors. And I can't quit when I have my ancestors, my great grandmothers who were working in the fields, and they didn't quit. And that's who I come from. That's the fabric that's in my DNA. So I had to tap into that strength from within.
That's powerful.
And that's my unity. My unity is with my ancestors. And I had to tap into that unity in order to make it through, because I've seen some really dark days. Mm-hmm. And I still look at real challenges because of what I decided to sign up for. You know, you it's not easy when you sign up to be a support system to a lot of women who feel like they don't have a support system. Mm-hmm. But that's okay, because we do have unity. We have it. If you cannot see it face to face, you definitely can see it when you look in the mirror, because you're looking at your ancestors and they are there. Right. That's the unity that I have to tap into.
No doubt about it. I like that. Let me ask my brother. I think this is my brother Herbie White from North Carolina. Brother Herbie, that's you?
Yes, it's me, Dr. Rogers. How you doing?
Doing great. So glad to hear from you today. Happy Kwanzaa to you, man.
Happy Kwanzaa to you and to everyone listening on the show.
Thank you. Any comments? We're on that third principle of Kwanzaa. We're talking about that collective work and responsibility. We're trying to show examples of how this can be used, how do we need to use it, and some folk that might be trying to use it. Any comments you have on this?
Well, the comment that I wanted to make is that the seven principles of Kwanzaa are basically seven principles of love.
Right.
Of how you feel under normal natural circumstances. Of a mother, of a father, of the children, how a father and mother love their children, and what they would do for their children. So in the course of a mother and a father loving their children, on a daily basis, they incorporate all the seven principles of Kwanzaa.
All right.
Of the unity of the family, of the self-determination of the family, of the collective work and responsibility, of what they do to keep the family going, of the purpose, and all of these things. But what happened to African people? Mm-hmm. An evil fiend intervened and turned us inside out and told us that we were everything that we were not.
Right.
And attempted to obliterate everything that God had put into us, and did a good job of it because of the extreme suffering that we went through. So what the seven principles of Kwanzaa mean to us now is to say, I'm not what these people said I am. I need to know who I really am. And to search, use those seven principles of Kwanzaa to search deep down inside of you, because it's still in your DNA. And as you find these principles, you start to feel better. The sister that spoke earlier and the things that she said were so inspiring. And what was happening is the work that she was doing, she was being reborn in an African spirit, doing what she was meant to do.
That's right.
What we all meant to do, what we had been doing at one time. And that's what our challenge is now, is to find ourselves. And then we will be able to live these seven principles of Kwanzaa naturally every day.
That's right. That's right. Now, that's the real deal. You're right, Brother White. You're right. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. Thank you.
Dr. Rogers?
Yes, okay, you're back. Good, yes.
Yes. Okay, happy Kwanzaa, everybody.
Same to you.
Mm-hmm. Happy Kwanzaa.
Did I interrupt anything, Doc?
No, go right ahead. Go right ahead with your comments. Uh-huh.
Yes, so I love what I've heard so far. And, I called you early. I was ready to go, and then I ate something, and it jacked me up. So I'm just kind of recovering, you know, from that. But I have been listening.
Okay.
So I do want to really kind of stress a couple of things.
Okay.
Number one, as you know, Doc, I kind of grew up with the Nguzu Saba,
right,
the Kwanzaa principles, the Kawaida.
Mm-hmm.
And so I lived it, and I'm so grateful. It's one of the best things that my parents, my mother, had me do in my life,
mm-hmm,
because it set a foundation for me, and it helped me to learn what it is to be African. My brother was just saying, because Brother Herbie was speaking?
Brother White, yeah, Brother White, uh-huh.
Yeah, Brother White, that was just so on point, because we were robbed of our culture. As a matter of fact, we were deprived. We were not allowed to practice any of our culture from the Caucasian. Mm-hmm. We were stripped wherever we were, whether it was here, Brazil, Cuba, you know, wherever, the islands, we were stripped of our culture, because we have a powerful culture, and we have a culture that holds, that binds us together. And the binding is called Ubuntu. I am because you are. There is no separation in indigenous African culture. And I want to zero in on West African culture, because that's where most of us can trace something, you know, to West Africa. So I'm not talking about ancient Egypt or anything. I'm talking about Nigeria and Ghana, where you hear, if you hear the indigenous people in Ghana speak English, they'll say they or them. And you listen to a young brother in the hood, you know, he'll say they or them, mm-hmm, instead of they or them. You follow me so far?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So the connections are actually clear. I was talking to a brother from Ghana recently, and I was telling him how we used to suck our teeth back in the day and say, man, get out of here. You know, that came out of Africa. That's what indigenous Africans do.
Mm-hmm.
Suck their teeth. You know, so there are so many things that we do that we can literally trace right back to West Africa, where the majority of us were taken from. And so when Dr. Karenga, you know, organized these seven principles, you know, he said that he was taking the best of African culture, because, you know, we all know no culture is perfect. But he was taking the best of African culture and re-presenting it back to us, because we had it when we came here.
Mm-hmm.
But we were stripped of it. We weren't allowed to, you know, to practice. So, and there is, when I say we is a critical word, because there is no I in the Nguzu Saba. In the seven
right.
principles, there's no I or me
That's
anywhere
right.
in those writings. So I want us to really, I want to suggest that we really study those principles. Because we're still oftentimes we're coming from a European mindset, because, you know, we've been Europeanized, but there's no I and or me in our culture. That's why, you know, in Africa and West Africa especially, they say it takes a village to raise a child. And here's the part that Hillary Clinton didn't bring back to us, and that's that everyone is a child of the village.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So we are one people, and it's not just about the nuclear family. It's about the village. And there are people, and I mention this brother all of the time, Maladoma Somme. You know, he's from Ghana in a village called Dagara. And he talks about that village life.
you know, and how they naturally take care of each other. It's just, it's very organic. It's very natural. You don't have to be told to do anything. Your brother, your sister's hurting, you immediately go, you know? So, we do. We have to relearn all of these things. And Milana Karenga did a great job at bringing these principles back to us. And I will say Ujima, which is a lot of what I heard from this sister. I love what she was saying and what she's doing. I've done very similar as many others have done. You know, we naturally serve because it's somewhere we're in touch with who we are as Africans. Ujima is something that I suggest that we study real hard because that's one of the pieces that we're losing quickly.
Okay.
Making our brothers and sisters' problems our problems and solving them together. Okay. That is the piece that we've got to grab a hold of and really internalize and begin to practice. So I'll stop there.
I like that. Exactly right. I think very clearly what we're doing tonight is we're really just honing in on those principles that we celebrate, we light our candles for. But we want, as you said, to begin to put these to work and study them very, very carefully so that folk can understand. I want to...
And let me say this, Doc. The studying is very critical.
Okay.
Because I've attended Kwanzaa celebrations and I've heard a lot of I'm stressing it's we. I've heard a lot of I. How do I, you know, practice Umoja? How do I? No, it's we. It's we. We learn it together.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Very good. Let's take a quick break.
You are listening to Black Reality Think Tank with host Dr. William Rogers on Time for an Awakening Media. Part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Okay, we are listening, as you said, to the Black Reality Think Tank. We are here every Tuesday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, from 7 to 9 Central. I am your host, William Rogers. We are part of the timeforanawakening.com network, which is also a part of the blacktalkradionetwork.com. And we have been broadcasting now for a couple of years, and we continually have attempted to bring our brothers and sisters together to engage in these conversations of empowerment. And so we thank all of you, our listening audience, for joining in with us and help and share these ideas and thoughts. So it's tonight we talk about principles of Kwanzaa and how to use them. We're also a call-in format. You can call us here at area code 215-490-9832. Area code 215-490-9832. Let's take a look at this fourth principle of Kwanzaa. Very clearly, when I think about that, I think about my brother that's on the line because he's quite often through his activities on social media and some of the things that he's done, he looks and focuses a lot on the cooperative economics, Ujamaa principle, which is the fourth principle of Kwanzaa, the cooperative economics. And when we think about some of the efforts that are being done to move us toward practicing that, I think of my brother from Newport News, Virginia, Brother Griffin. Want to give us some words about Ujamaa? I think your phone is doing something. It's not coming.
Oh, my computer. You can come back then.
Okay, I'll come back. Okay. Ujamaa, anybody want to do that? One of the things that I definitely think about is the initiative to We Buy Black movement that's going on. And I think there are a lot of people that are involved in the We Buy Black idea, and I'm really appreciative of that. But there are others as well. The mics are open, everybody, if you want to have an idea of other organizations that you may have that may be participating in the We Buy Black concept or things like that, or that are practicing cooperative economics. or maybe suggestions on how we can do it in a better way. How can we practice cooperative economics with a little bit more strength in our community? Because obviously the bottom line of everything in our community is economics. So how do you think that we can do that? Any suggestion from our audience? The mics are open.
Yeah. Dr. Rogers, can I intercept?
Please go right ahead.
Correct. Yes. Well, Dr. Rogers, there are two things that we've been stripped of. We've been taken from our land and taken out of our culture. That was, of course, self-defense, in which I suggest the listening audience and everybody on this line, all black people should know how to defend themselves, some type of martial art or boxing or whatever you have to do in order to do what you have to do. Also is economics. And that's another part of our revolution, that as we have a cultural revolution, we have an economic revolution. We have to get back to these small business man and woman neighborhoods. I knew people who started off selling dinners and eventually got a restaurant. I knew people who started off one time selling newspaper, who opened up a newspaper stand and a bookstore. So we have to get back, right, we have to get back to those small businesses, because like you have a Black Friday, we have something in Philadelphia where we have the small businessman day and woman's day, where we support the black businesses in Philadelphia. The restaurants that are still around, the bookstores that are still around, the retail shops are selling clothing that's still around, the tailors that are still around, the people who have juice factories and make all types of whatever they make when it comes to food, clothing, or real estate. So we have to get back in the cities around the country with that small businessman association, because you know one thing, Dr. Rogers, that they did? Black people hired black people in those businesses.
Right.
And when you have a working young man and woman, you got less crime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, I like that. Sister Lotus, you had talked to me once about some things that you all were doing for your soul sister. And you know, Sister Lotus, you got some background noise. I'm not sure what that is. That's real sensitive. But I don't know what, you know. But anyway, still, I want you to give us some ideas of some of the things that you all have initiated to try to help fund Soul Sisters programs that you had done. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, we right now have really been tapping into our events. So we have, we just did a holiday cocktail party, and then we have a spring ball coming up in March, where we'll be highlighting some of the accomplishments of some of the women here, some things that they've done to give back to the community. But what we're doing is trying to get some community partners to kind of try to get some more support. So we're trying to build relationships with other organizations and kind of piggyback off of what they're doing and work together to get some support. But in addition, we do our membership drive, which everybody benefits from. It's not just about the sisterhood or the organization individually, but it's about collectively trying to help our sisters build their businesses as well. So everybody wins when they support Soul Sisters. So the biggest thing now is positioning ourselves for some of the grants that are available. But because we are really focused in on working with our community of black women and not wanting to lose, that this is really what we are about, we face some challenges.
Okay.
Because we haven't been willing to compromise on some of our principles that will give us access to more revenue, because we are trying to keep it authentic as much as possible for our community.
So I guess basically what you're saying is that along with the cooperative economics, there has to be a strong program of collaboration as well. And there has to be a spirit of collaboration. Is that correct? Am I correct in saying that?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
Yeah. And that's a very dominant principle, is that we have to collaborate outside of where we are and get others to work together. You know, you help me, I help you. You know, it's the old, you scratch my back, I scratch yours kind of thing, you know.
Right.
Now,
right.
Do you find people are open to that, or is there seems to be a struggle with our community doing that with each other? Do you find that?
I think we've lost a lot of the jail in our community. I'm 50, and so I can see it on both sides. I do remember times where the Black community did seem to do a better job of supporting our own, and I think it was, I don't know if it was the brother right before me who talked about supporting small businesses and Black-owned businesses. It's crucial. You know, that is our survival. That is the way we will have longevity. And so I do think that we've lost a lot of our sensitivity to other people and to their struggles and their hardships and even some of the things that they're trying to do to build.
Right.
You know, we just don't do as well of a job as we used to at one time in supporting that, supporting each other's efforts. Like, you know, we'll go out to eat and spend $30 on a meal for one person, but we'll see it as a challenge to join an organization like Soul Sisters where it's only $20 a month for membership.
Okay.
But that $20 a month for membership gives each one of those ladies an opportunity to market and grow her business within our organization. That's a very small investment to make in your business. And it really is, because we have a pretty wide reach. We have a pretty good number of women that's associated.
Okay.
So we've had several women that will want to market in the group, and I'm trying to get them to understand the importance of, you're more than welcome, but you got to support the group as well. So help us help you.
Okay.
To build your business as we build our business together, collectively, unity,
right.
Moja.
Brother White and I are from a hometown. He and I are homeboys together from a city that was actually was the first Black Wall Street, where it was booming Black businesses all throughout that city and doing that. Brother White, talk a little bit about how you think that happened. I know segregation had a lot to do with it. But even still, you know, what is some of the things that you can recall back in those years when Black Durham was booming and all of the Black businesses were feeding us, you know? How do you think that played in?
Well, before I get to that, Dr. Rogers,
okay.
I'd like to say something about the problem with the seven principles of Kwanzaa.
Okay.
During the time that African people were enslaved in this country, exhibiting any of the principles of Kwanzaa in your behavior would get you punished.
Mm-hmm.
Self-determination, unity, anything like that during that time would get you punished. So with that being the practice of the day, what kind of psychological damage did that do from one generation to another?
Okay.
And then after slavery, it's still going on. You're just not punished the same way. A good example would be Colin Kaepernick.
Mm-hmm.
So any organization that you know that publicly exhibits the seven principles of Kwanzaa gets a lot of negative feedback from the European community.
Okay.
Serious feedback, like the Black Panthers, like the SCLC, who only wanted what they were entitled to. They wasn't asking white people to give them anything. Just leave us alone so that we can do what we need to do. And they were killed for that.
Right.
So that's the uphill battle. We're fighting a physical battle and a psychological battle.
Yes, we are. Definitely psychological.
So we've all heard the term that the white man's ice is colder.
Okay.
So we will bypass a black store and go to a white store and don't know why we're really doing it.
It's true.
And if you in a situation where a job situation, a large job, a lot of black people won't congregate together because they don't want to be all seen together, so they'll sit with a white person so they won't look like they're racist.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And we see it every day. We see that every day. Brother Marcus, you want to add something to that?
Yes, I want to add something to just piggyback on what the brother just stated about the psychological damage.
Right.
See, unless we address the psychological damage that was done to us as a people, it's going to be hard for us to get our economic house in order. Because
right.
They work together. It's psychology and economics. See, and that has been the one of the main problems, is that we have to find some way to correct the damage that was done to our mind, you know, so we can move ahead. And we don't need everybody either. We just need a small group. I think we have enough people right now. It's just that we're not organized. That's one of the problem too. It's all lack of organization, as the sister was talking about. You know, your body is an organization. The eyes see, the arms, you know, lifting, the nose smell, you know. So each part of your body has its purpose. That is organization. Your family is an organization. That's why they keep destroying the black family, because they know that is the solution.
That's right.
I think that we as a people, we are going to rise to the occasion. I think that 2020, I see something developing where our people is pushing more for economics, get our economic house in order, because if we can get our economic house in order, a lot of other things will fall into place. See, as the sister was talking about, you know, one of the main problems you have is lack of resources, economics, you know. And if we can take control of our communities economically, you know, the brother Carlos Cooks, he had a 30 to 60 day program where they said, look, for 30 to 60 days, do not shop with non-black business people in our community. Go outside of the community. Go to the white community. Go buy in that community, because you get cheaper products at better prices.
Right.
And what that will do, that will deprive that alien who is in our community. It will deprive him of that. Those resources, he can't pay, meet his payroll, he can't pay the butcher, he can't pay the milkman. You see, because really that's the way it happens. It's one distributor that's in that community, and he goes around and he distributes to everybody in the community, those stores in the community. Those shop owners, he don't go and buy all that stuff one time. He gets credit. The milkman comes and put it on the shelf and say, okay, I'll be back next week. And he'll come, you know, and he pays the milkman next week. The bread man is the same thing. It's one distributor that do go around in the community and do that. So if we get ourselves organized, look, we are not going to support you. We are not going to support you in our community.
All right.
You will be forced to leave the community, and then we can fill that void.
Right.
You see?
Exactly.
But until we get to that point, we won't be running on a treadmill. But as I said, I think 2020, I see something developing, and our people, we're going to move in the right direction, because that's what we do. We survive. We survive.
We do that.
They didn't expect us to survive, but we're here.
That's right.
We're here talking on the phone, so we're still here.
Right. I pray you're right.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dr. Rogers.
Yes, go
can
ahead.
I say something?
Sure, go right
you
ahead.
Don't mind, sir. I'm going to mention three people, and I think that if more of people in our race would listen to the leadership, we'd be in a better predicament today like we were when they were around. And that's Booker T. Washington, and Du Bois wrote a book called The Negro in the South. Mm-hmm. And also, right, and also you had Carter G. Woodson, The Miseducation of the Negro.
Right.
And when I say that, is that we've been miseducated. I'll give you an example. At one time, easily from the 50s to the 70s, Philadelphia had a blooming business. And one of the businesses were like Du Bois and like Garvey and like Du Bois and like Washington said, he talked about the Barbara and how the Barbara will always be in existence. Mm-hmm. Now, and they're still around. And the woman, of course, who has the beauty parlor. We're in the beauty and looking good. Look at Madam C.J. Walker. Mm-hmm. But the miseducation comes in, Dr. Rogers, that my generation comes in, and we benefit from the civil rights. And your family was right for telling you this. They said, Tim, my grandfather said, you don't want to be a grease monkey, because he had his own mechanic shop, and he made good. But he made good in the mechanic shop. And my other uncle said, you don't want to lift a sledgehammer and work a jackhammer. I said, what's wrong with that? Oh, no, you want to go to college to get a degree. That was put in our mind to make us think that we were doing better without having a business. Mm-hmm. In other words, they didn't realize what they were telling you. They didn't tell you that have the trade with the education, like Washington said. Their thing is that you want to be better than me and get the degree. No, you need to put them together. So it's just like people in North Philly, they left North Philly with the Germantown and Mount Airy. They don't look back at North Philly. The people who went to West Philly moved to Lava Rock. They're not going back. You know, in other words, now I don't have to go to a HBCU. I can go to a PWR. I can go to Penn and Yale and Harvard.
Okay.
See my point?
Right.
See, listen, and you gotta develop generations of wealth and stay where you're at. That's what Woodson said. That's what definitely Booker T. Washington and Du Bois in his own words. You got to have and keep what you have and maintain it. If not, white people would turn it around and say you never had it, say they invented it. Like three white guys say invented jazz. How long did they last? That's a black man's music.
Right. Okay, well, we've got three other principles we want to look at real quickly. Sister Yan, we talk a lot about NEA, purpose, and a lot of what we're talking about leads right into the NEA discussion. Talking about the collective vocation, the building and development of our community in order to restore our people back to their traditional greatness. Do you have examples in Greensboro of folk that are doing that near purpose work that you might want to mention? I know that there's a lot of active, you know, you got a black university there, North Carolina A&T College is there, and obviously some of the University of North Carolina college systems are there as well. But from your vantage point, what do you think? Do you see that? Do you see NEA at work in Greensboro?
Honestly, no.
Okay.
NEA and some of the other principles that we've spoken about are declining in Greensboro specifically.
Okay.
And it's a shame. I recently went to a meeting, attended a meeting with it was a multiracial meeting. So the white folk were at the table that were there. They were anarchists. And white guy started an organization called the John Brown Defense, somebody or the other. And he was talking about how he was in Charleston, you know, they were in Charleston defending against the Klan.
Okay.
And when I saw the strong purpose in this guy, you know, he was about defense. You know, he was about doing what needed to be done. And I saw, and I look around me at the universities here, at HBCUs, and I see such a weak attitude, you know, toward having a purpose. I just said, we're going backward. We're losing. So we have to regain that. Because at least where I'm living, a lot of that. Now, also a lot of that has been hijacked by the strong Klan presence here. I also learned how strong the Klan presence is in Greensboro Police Department.
Right.
So there's a whole lot of stuff, you know, a whole lot of attacks against it. Somebody was talking earlier about everything that we have done and try to do, there's always an attack against us. So what I want to say is the psychological attacks are so effective. And these are the invisible attacks that keep us from, you know, staying in our purpose, that we've got to deal with that. So what myself and others have done, we've had a lot of dialogue and focus on the actual organization, because it's hard, it's difficult to follow through and to maintain and sustain things when we're not communicating effectively and when we're not well organized. So, yeah, those are things I was thinking. And also, I want to say something to Brother Marcus. I don't know if I've ever gotten to say this to him, but thank you for being a part of, you know, the Black Reality Think Tank, calling in regularly. Because if you don't mind, Doc, I want to jump to Moja quickly.
Go right ahead.
When I was living in Brooklyn, I lived in Crown Heights and you know, hung out in Flatbush and whatnot. And there were lots of Haitians and Trinidadians and, you know, Jamaicans and Puerto Ricans, you know, just that melting pot was there. And the rift, the divide between Africans born in America and Africans born on the islands was huge. I don't know how it is now, because it's been decades since I've been in New York. But I remember us battling each other, calling each other names, as if we were not the same African people.
Right.
And I think about why we fed into that. You know, they would call us, not they, but brothers and sisters from the islands would call us Yankees and, you know, some other words, and we call them, you know, brickheads, and they say bumbleclot, and we just go back and forth. And you know, as I sank deeper into consciousness, I said, how did that happen? How do we get sucked into that level of self-hatred,
yeah,
you know, and division? So at the root of everything we're talking about, we've got to heal from this self-hatred piece. Because right. Brother Marcus brings such power to this conversation, along with everyone else. But he brings power and a sense of reality, you know, that personally I love.
Mm-hmm.
And it just breaks my heart when I think about the fact that, you know, they've done such a great job at dividing us.
I like that. Brother Marcus, you want to comment and say something?
Yeah, Sister Ayan. You know, you're right. But one thing was the equalizer was sex. So, you know, sex equalized everything, because, you know, we all got together at nighttime, you know. The Yankee and the Jamaica, the Haitian, so we all mix it up. But you are correct, you know, because, you know, when I first came to America, I experienced that. You know, they call me, you know, oh, banana boat, this, that, the other. But, you know, I think we got over that. Yeah, we got over that, because a lot of us are realizing we're all in the same boat now.
Right.
We're all in the same boat together. Because right. When the police catch you, you ain't ask if you're Jamaican or you know, a Haitian or whatever, you know, you just see somebody black. So, you know, we are moving in the right direction. You know, it may seem like we're not moving, but I guarantee you, we're moving.
We are, and just like another quick thing, Dr. Africana Kwal, is everybody listening to her?
Tell me about her.
Listening how?
Listening to her, she's the former ambassador to the UN Zimbabwe.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, you're exactly right. Uh-huh.
This sister is a powerhouse.
Yes, she is.
Right.
And she is encapsulating the whole Nguzu Saba.
Yes,
come
is.
Back
right.
home to Africa, and
yes.
She's a strong black, Dr. Rogers, you call the womb?
Yep.
She's the strongest black woman that I hear out here.
Yep.
As sister, she's calling us, she's straight. She's saying, stop acting stupid.
You know, she talks the way that I talk. Stop acting stupid and come home and take your land back. Come back to the motherland. And she is a great uniting force. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, there's some beautiful things happening out there. Let's just get on board.
All right. Sister Yan, you're right. I heard it. She was on Elliot's show. She was on Brother Elliot's show. She was great. You're right. She was great.
Brother Elliot? Oh, yeah, she's a powerhouse.
Mm. Yeah, Brother Elliot had her on. She was great.
I say.
I like her, too. Yeah, she is, really is good. Okay, we got two more we want to look at, Kumba and Imani. And maybe I keep going to you, Sister Lotus. You know, I know that you all, again, are doing some of those kinds of principal ideas in your organization, your attempt to build the Umoja process of unity with women. And one of the things I want for our listening audience to understand is what we've tried to do tonight is we tried to show that all of these principles run in together. They are no separate entities here. Because if there were, then it wouldn't be an African principle. So when Dr. Karinga developed this, he designed it so that they would run into each other. They were mailed and gelled together, that they would cement, one would build on the other. And very clearly, that's what we've tried to do and tried to show that. And so in order for you to keep women working together collectively, and you tried to build your cooperative economics, you've had to be creative, you know, as well. Talk about some of those things you did with your T-shirts and these other things that you've done, and the imagery of these T-shirts and things that you promoted them throughout the city of Dallas.
Well, one of the things that's always been very important to me is the image of the Black woman. And I knew that I was going through such an extremely challenging time. And I had nothing. I had no money, no support, real support system, because my support system was rocked just like I was, you know, because we all went through the same thing at the same time. So I had to get creative. And a lot of times we judge people. We don't know the backstory. I'm a master's degree. You know, I graduated with a 3.8 GPA and, you know, worked on my job was in corporate for 20 plus years. And I did what I knew how to do, but life happened. And so I remember going through a period of time when I didn't really have too many clothes, but I've always been into, you know, fashion and whatnot. I'm kind of simple, but I always liked a certain presentation. And it bothered me when the reality shows came in and just did a big wave over the TV. Or over the airwaves, and it just took over. But what it did was gave a real negative look to the Black woman, in my opinion. It was a lot of materialistic women where they argued all the time, they fought each other, it just wasn't unity. And so one of the things that we did to combat that was, it's actually one of the reasons Soul Sister was started as well, because we wanted to show a different image of the Black woman. So I started a T-shirt line, and we started an agency for women, and it was called Mahogany Queens. But I made a lot of T-shirts that just uplifted the Black woman. And one of the things that was really important to me, when we did our holiday Christmas party, my son, who's also a part of the board, he's young, he's 22, but he believes so strongly in Soul Sister. And one of the things he said when he was speaking at the cocktail party was, his mother represents Soul Sisters everywhere. I'm just one person, but I represent what we are as Black women everywhere, women that have to be creative in taking care of their children. And so one of the things that he said that just really touched me so much was, he said, "Who am I not to support my mother's dreams when she enables me to live my dream?" So he talked about how he remembered me going to make T-shirts and selling shirts to make enough money just to have dinner, you know, and just to be able to take care of them and to pay the bills. And it was small. I didn't have the resources to invest a lot of money to have a big T-shirt shop. But it was just little by little, but it was always important to me that the messages get out there. So I really was just trying to make lemonade out of the lemons. Okay, I don't have a lot of money. I don't have clothes. But if I'm going to make myself some T-shirts to wear and to be able to sell, it's going to have the image of what I'm trying to express. So it was very powerful with the messages that we wanted to get out there and just to kind of stand on, no, Black women are more than gold diggers and more than angry women fighting each other. No, we're queens and we love each other and we support each other. So that's kind of the messages that we try to release through our clothing line.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, we've got about 4 minutes left. Sister Yan, why don't you close us out with the Imani concept? How do you see that being used in our community? Or do you see it being used in our community? Do we have faith in our community? We have faith in each other? We have faith in our people, our ancestors? What do you think?
My observation is that, again, since so much has been taken away from us, especially, by the way, during integration was where we really began to break down, because during that Jim Crow era, we still had all Black businesses, et cetera, Black doctors, and integration just damaged us severely. And so, yeah, there's been a breakdown since, a steady breakdown. And we are regaining faith, and I'll just, since you mentioned ancestors, what I'm loving that I see is Black folk that are embracing African spiritual systems.
Okay.
Because yeah. African people, as all other indigenous people currently, as far as I know, that I'm aware of so far, honor their ancestors and see the relationship with the ancestors as an integral part of one's spiritual life. And I see that on the increase,
right.
African spirituality. So having faith in the ancestors is literally not just, you know, a maybe empowerment. That's a definite empowerment. A way of spiritually rather empowering one, because our ancestors do sit at the feet of the divine and work for us. And so I see that growing. I see that growing. But again, we need improvement, you know, and I'm just going to really stress, study the principles so we know what we're talking about, you know, in depth. Study these principles in depth, relearn our culture, reclaim our African minds, so that we can begin to build on these principles, or using these principles. So I see possibility. I see the possibility in exercising faith.
Well, I want to believe, like Brother Marcus said, that this is can change. And so I do. I really appreciate all of you for tonight. We are at our bewitching closing hour. We thank you so much for your input about this very significant event. Our program will be posted in our archive. You can go back and listen, go back and get the information on Soul Sister Stand Up organization in case you didn't get it. We really appreciate you. I don't know how each of you celebrate the holiday, it really is not important. As long as you come together as brothers and sisters and continue to love each other, I think that's the most important part. And I think that was one of the things we wanted to bring out in Kwanzaa. I know for those of you who are my Christian brothers and sisters, this is the birth of Christ for you, and you celebrate that. For those of you who still are in a little part of the commercial and you have children and you want to do something with that, I embrace what you're trying to do, and I ask that you keep your minds and eyes open, that as you do that, that you look at also some of the possibilities of the alternative to that as well. And that's what we wanted to try to do here. It's not to take away anything that you believe. This is a wonderful time of the year. It has always been. A lot of it is shrouded in memory. As I think back in my family life as a young boy, these were great, great, great times. And it wasn't so all much too much about commercialism, but it just being about family. So have a wonderful day tomorrow, and we'll be back here on New Year's Eve, what's known as New Year's Eve, next week. And we're going to talk more about this Kwanzaa, but we'll do it from perspective. So we're going to ask Sister Whitney Houston to close us out and take us home. Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Mm-hmm.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas. Let your heart be light. From now on, our troubles will be out of sight. My Lord. Yourself a merry little Christmas. Make the Yuletide.